Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to WFHR's Playmakers. Welcome to the show. Hope you all are having a great Monday afternoon. Happy start of the week. We hope it's treating you good. We're here to have some fun, talk some sports this hour. Your host, James, is here, joined by my partner in sports, Randy Paul.
Does seem like the weekend already, doesn't it?
It does a little
and
bit.
It's only Monday.
Oh, man. I had to remind myself of that. We got so much fun to do today. We're going to kick off the show talking with Ross Provost from Bird and Eights in just a moment. We got turkey season coming up. Want to recap the expo with him. All of that on the way. We got to talk Masters. Even I know some golf this weekend. Big moment in sports over the weekend with the Masters. And we'll talk some NBA playoffs now that the seedings are set up. Want to get into baseball. But a little bit differently with you, Randy, because ESPN had something interesting come out, a watchability index.
Oh.
The teams that are most exciting, a lot of fun to watch, and I thought that was an interesting way to rank that. I got to talk Rafters with you, and Randy has some local stuff for us as well. Even a little NFL talk I've got for us, everybody. But before all of that, let's be joined by one of our older friends here at Playmakers, Ross Provost from Bird and Eights. Ross, how you doing, man?
Good. How about you guys?
Doing good here. We're doing all right here and everything. Randy and I were just joking that we couldn't believe it's Monday. But other than that, I mean, things are going good over here, man. How are you doing? It feels like at least a Wednesday, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. And plus, we're already halfway through April here, so time's flying.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of funny. I just mentioned to James when I walked in today that it's hard to believe that it was exactly 1 month ago today on March 14th that the Muskie Expo started.
Yeah, and that seems like we just got done with it. I mean, we're still obviously kind of coming down from, you know, organizing stuff and, packing up from the big weekend and putting stuff away and getting inventory all calculated and everything. But, yeah, it's crazy that a month has flown by, and here we are already looking onto the horizon of a new turkey season and summer coming. So,
you know, it's kind of funny because we were talking that if I didn't get to the expo on Friday or Saturday, that would be a good thing because I'd be in Green Bay covering the Assumption Royals playing for a state championship, which came true. And then on Sunday, when I get over there, the first person I ran into was just talking about the number of people that were there on Friday and Saturday. And I guess it was just an incredible turnout this year.
Yeah, it was some of the best numbers they've ever seen, which was, you know, it's encouraging as a very, very encouraging as a vendor to, have great turnout like that. And I mean, I think there was talk that there's always a huge line to Friday at 2 p.m. to for startup and the opening day of the expo. And they said they set a record for the longest line to get into the expo. So that was impressive to hear. And Friday's numbers were just great. So it was awesome to see that the sport of muskie fishing is alive and well, and very encouraging to talk to people that are excited about a new season. And all around great weekend it was.
I know one of the things that we talked about when we had you on the air before the expo was that you had some new colors that you're going to add to some baits, and you were excited about that with opportunity to sell those to the folks as well. How did that turn out for you?
Yeah, those went over really well. We had, like I think I mentioned when we talked last time, we were working with a bait maker over in Plover, Wisconsin, so a local guy, and we had two of his colors in a number of, just two of his colors in his bait, and we were sold out within the first half hour. Oh. On those. I mean, people were making beelines to his booth that he had there, and then also our booth just to grab these the custom colors that we had, and it's awesome to see because I mean people are excited about his bait, and then it's great to see that they're excited about the colors that we have in his bait. So that's fun to people are excited to get that new next bait that can hopefully put the next big fish in the boat for them.
I know one of the things we also talked about with you on the air was the fact that we're hoping there'd be more vendors there this year, and not as if there was a lot of room to put them in, but I think that came true as well.
Yeah, I think they pushed their limit again as far as, being able to give out guys an opportunity to get their baits out there, get their new products, whatever it might be that they have to offer to the muskie community, and it definitely expanded down a little bit farther and allowed more, more bait makers to get in there and just, offer their product to people. And that's cool to see because it's neat that you know, the sport is alive and well, like I said earlier, but it's also, there's still guys that are, you know, ingenuity. What can they come up with next as far as something new, something different, and, you know, what can they offer to the sport of muskie fishing? So it's a fun weekend all in all, and it's very, very fun and get you amped up for a new season, that's for sure.
Ross, you hit on something that I really wanted to bring up with you, and just doing a little homework this weekend and hearing you know, the last conversation we had with you and Randy and everything. We've been fishing longer than most things in society, in life, in general, let alone it being a sport or a hobby or anything. Of course, for so long, it was a matter of survival. And we're right. still coming up with new techniques and new lures and some of these things. Is that something that excites you about this about this sport? Because to me, I found that really exciting when I was reading about that and seeing how there's still so much work being done on all of these fronts.
Yeah, it is. It is exciting. It's kind of fascinating to see what people come up with, you know, I mean, because it's like you're trying to find that new twist that's going to convert a fish to eat and, you know, obviously trick them into eat. You know, what's the new thing that you can do, a different vibration, a different sound, a different presentation of a bait swimming through the water. And it's kind of, I think what we've seen is the possibilities. I mean, obviously they have a limit, but it is kind of limitless. Like what little tweak can you put on a bait that's been around for years that, you know, is a slight change that now is a game changer in the muskie world, because the muskies have never seen it. They've never felt that vibration, and it tricks them. And I think a lot of what we're kind of seeing too is that I would say some of the stuff that kind of phased out years ago is kind of coming back full circle to being back in line with, you know, I mean, it may be phased out because, yeah, it ran its course, but now, you know, like, there was a big fad years ago with double tens, that was the size of the blade that they're using on these bucktails, big bladed bucktails, and it was a craze. I mean, it was wildfire for catching muskies. And now I think, you know, people have kind of swung, like that has kind of ran its course. They're still working great, but it seems like people have come back around to smaller blades now. So like there's kind of that full circle of, like, you see within, you know, bait making, and we obviously haven't been around in the industry as long as some of these other people, like the guy that runs the expo, and his knowledge of what he's seen in baits in the last 40 years is impressive. So
I never would have thought of this without talking to you, Ross, that there was a parallel between trying to get a muskie to eat and trying to get a toddler and tricking them. There's a little bit of a similar thing there for me. I never would have made that connection. That's great.
You know, it's also interesting you talk about the size of those bucktails and those tens. It's interesting when you walk around the expo that you can see all the variety of lures that are available, but some of the size of those lures are what always just are amazing to me. I just can't believe that those muskies are going after that, but those big ones, they feed on them, don't they?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we fish a lot of northern Wisconsin waters, so we tend to err on the smaller side of baits. But if you go out to like Lake St. Clair, which is over in Michigan, which we fished, and then a lot of the Minnesota waters, guys over there are throwing pretty big. I mean, you're kind of trying to match the hatch essentially, like what's the forage, the bait in the system, the water that you're fishing, that muskies are going to be chasing. So it's like, but yeah, there's definitely, I mean, the size of these baits, I mean, it obviously can take its toll on your body for casting them for hours and hours on end, but guys are willing to do it for the next big fish, so.
You know, it's interesting. Some of my family and friends were over in Green Bay this last weekend. They were doing some walleye fishing over there, and it kind of reminded me of the upcoming muskie season, and there's different zones that open at different times, aren't there?
Correct. Yeah, so it's, you know, realistically, yeah, you know, turkey season is underway or just about to start here, but yeah, I mean, muskie season is only a couple weeks off for the so they basically break the state in half. So the southern zone of Wisconsin south of Highway 10, that'll be open the first weekend in May. And then north of Highway 10, roughly, is the northern zone, and that's the Saturday closest to Memorial Day is how they word that. So I always figure Memorial Day weekend is, that's kind of our go time. That's when we start, is we fish primarily the northern zone, and that's when we always usually start, is that Memorial Day weekend. So
is that split just because of the spawn?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It's just the you know. they figure that these fish are on different schedules, and you know there's a little bit more delay with the fish that are up north with the colder weather, later ice off, things like that. So
I think one of the things that we wanted to touch on yet, too, was you talked a little bit about the turkey season that's coming up, and I think I heard that the youth hunt already is underway, and that Wednesday, I believe, in 2 days here, is going to be the turkey hunt for adults. I think you mentioned one time that you had an opportunity to get one in a different method last year.
Yeah, that is true. That was a good memory.
Yeah.
Usually we're... primarily how we hunt them is with shotguns. So this last year, one of my buddies he started exploring crossbows, and he said, well, you want to try to get an archery kill with a turkey? And I said, let's go for it. You know, this is something unique and something different that I'd have to learn. So we got a crash course on it, went out and, later and hunted and ended up getting my first archery turkey with a crossbow. So that was a cool experience. I mean, usually, obviously, like I said, we're used to dealing with a shotgun, which is a totally different, feel as far as the hunt. And it really panned out perfectly and turned out to be an awesome hunt that we captured on film, too. So I still got to get that video out, actually. And I'm hoping to get it out during this turkey season here, if time allows, and to get some editing time in. So
I know that was one thing I'm just going to bring up with your website for those people who haven't had a chance to go there yet. Not only are you going to see some great muskie action, but there's another thing that they can look at and will be able to look at in the future is hunting as well.
Yeah, the thing, we do have a couple turkey videos from prior years that we just haven't had time to release that we're looking to get out this season, and then hopefully we can capture. It's going to be a blur the next few weeks. But we're hoping that we can at least capture a couple new videos this year during turkey season. And actually, I just got I was texting my buddy that I fish and film with. He actually just bought some new bow hunting stuff for the fall for deer hunting. So he's already planning out different techniques for that. As far as he's looking at different stand setups and whatnot. So he's looking way ahead. So we could potentially even be getting some new deer hunt footage if all goes well this fall.
You know, before we let you go, we got to ask you, how's that little one of yours doing?
He's doing good. Yeah, I just spent the day with him today, watching him, and his teeth are sprouting and growing.
Such a fun time.
He's gonna be eight months in what is today? Today's in a couple days. He's gonna be 8 months. So time's flying with that too, but we're enjoying it definitely.
Got to get him on more videos. It was awesome.
Yeah, we got to get him on the air. We got to get him.
We'll work on a little bit of some language skills here.
Sounds great.
Maybe soon. So,
first words: radio and Bird and Eights.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There you go. I like it.
We appreciate you, Ross. We really do appreciate everything. Not only spending time with us, but keeping this sport alive and helping do that. We appreciate the work that you and Bird and Eights are doing. Say hi to the team over there for us, and we'll catch up real soon, man.
Will do. Sounds good. Appreciate the time, guys, and it's always great being on with you guys. It's great to catch up.
Talk to you later. Take care. Ross Provost from Bird and Eights joining us right there. Be sure to find out more and bookmark their webpage, burnin8.com. That's burnin and eights is spelled out. Be sure to bookmark it. You throw it into your Googler, it'll pop up right away for you. I know it did for me years ago when I first bookmarked that page. Their apparel, baits, gear, there's all kinds of stuff. Check out their blog. And as Randy was touching on, they got an amazing YouTube page. I've been honest with Randy and the audience and Ross and everything. I don't fish or hunt really much. I fish. I've never really been a hunter. I can't get enough of their videos, man. I love their stuff. It's fantastic. And it helps me not only knowing more about this, but even being able to talk about it with friends that do hunt and some of that stuff, and gives me a little more empathy and understanding of hunting and understanding the sport a little bit more than for most. I think they do some really cool work over there. And the way that nowadays the footage that they can get is just unmatched. It's awesome. Awesome.
If you haven't seen it, you have to watch some of their videos, because they have slow motion of fish coming out of the water, going into the net.
It's really good.
They got drones flying as they're driving out to the spot. It's like I've said before, it's more professional, I think, than some of the ones I've seen on television.
Burnin8.com, and throw that into your search bar on YouTube and subscribe to the work that they are doing, everybody. I would say that, so Randy, last week, it kind of, like a lot of the best things in radio can really create created. We came up with an idea for, instead of, we're going to keep doing, you know, stats of the show, because we all love stats. Anybody that loves sports likes stats. But everybody's got a stat of the show. You know, Lebatard, Patrick, everybody's got one of those things. So we're going to do a story of the show. Hmm. And I think that really, we our first story of the show was really already right there. Right. Ross and Bern and Ates, that little one, you know, all the above. But I think that a good second story of the show is what just wrapped up about 24 hours ago, just about, and that's the Masters.
Right.
And I want to talk about that with you before we go to break and get into some local coverage with you and everything. And I was really excited to have you in today because you're kind of our golf guy, and you have been for years. You and my brother are the people I talk to when I want to know something about golf. And I, you know, have been honest about that part too. I don't really know golf that well. I know the sport. I know the players. But I have not played a lot of golf. But I don't think that you have to be even know, like, even more than I do about golf to have been brought in yesterday in a Sunday in the Masters. And especially for my generation, Randy, where we were the Tiger generation, mm-hmm. Of really young people that were never into golf before, all of a sudden paying attention to golf and getting to see, like, people that didn't watch the Masters results for Sundays at on the Masters for 20 years, for our first experience is seeing Tiger and seeing excitement, where, all you know, that's not typical for a Masters win. There's a solemnness to it. There's a respect and honor to it and everything. And I kind of like that too, as much as I enjoyed seeing Tiger following the ball into the hole and some of that. I'll never forget it. What we saw yesterday was something that I touched on last week with the story of the show with Luka Doncic and him going to Dallas. And the emotions and the tears and him fighting back tears when the video's playing and all that. And just, you know, emotions you don't see out of athletes anymore. They've done such a disservice to the sport in trying to protect the sport. The NFL got on this first, but now every league has done it, where if you are a player, and even before you're drafted, one of the things they're doing is sending you through PR training and how to answer questions and how to handle, you know, different things in different moments in the media, a win, a loss, all of this. And so now when you get Patrick Mahomes interviewed after a win or after a loss, well, I could tell you what he's going to say. I can write it down right now for you. And that's not just, I'm just picking him because he's the face of the league. But that's anybody. Any the backup guard. You know, any player is all, they go through this regiment, and now you're told, hey, this is how you answer questions. And it's every sport that's like this, to where they've killed the personality in sports. And we don't get it anymore. And then people wonder why people are pulling away from sports more and more. There's plenty of reasons for that. But I think, if not the number two reason, the number three reason for it is this. The number one reason is everything going to streaming and everything going to money. That's, to me, the number one reason why you're gonna kill the golden goose in football, and you might hurt all the sports, or you are hurting all the sports with this. When you forget about your older audience, the core audience that made you, no business model has ever done well doing that. And all the major sports are doing that right now with our senior population. And by that, I mean anything 50 and above. Heck, 45 and above. You are forgotten. They don't care about us. And they've proven that over and over again. Every major sport, especially football. But and then they take away the personality in sports. So now it's all boring. There's never going to be another Charles Barkley. There's never going to be any of that anymore until after the game. And once they retire, that's totally different. But while they're playing, it's why when you see a little personality out of an Aaron Rodgers and he spells out relax, it becomes such a national thing and people remember it. Because that's the closest we get to any personality with these guys anymore. We don't know any of these guys anymore, as much as we've got as social media and all that. So to see the emotion in Luka last week, to see Rory fall on his knees, and every one of us, again, that are you are a diehard golf fan or you're just tuning in to see something cool on sports, you are immediately in his shoes and brought to where he is. And you got to feel it. You have to feel the emotions and the relief in him. I saw a stat. Most people to get the Grand Slam in golf, it took him three tries. Took Rory 11. I mean, knowing some of that stuff, whether you do or you don't, but knowing some of that stuff, watching that moment and everything, I got goosebumps right now, and it's a day later. I can't imagine, as a fan of this sport, somebody who truly deserves this moment, not people like myself that are kind of just tuning in, but like you, Randy, my brother, people that really love golf, how excited were you for that moment? Were you rooting for anything or one direction or the other going into the Masters in general?
You know, it's interesting watching Rory's reaction, because the same hole that he had played and he had missed that putt, which was probably about a 4 or 5 footer, you could just he handled it very calmly, but inside you had to be thinking, he's thinking to himself, oh no, here was my one chance, and now I got to go to a playoff, and who knows what's going to happen in a playoff, right? And like you said, he waited 11 years for this to happen. He's only seven people that have ever won this, the Grand Slam, and only one person did it in one
year.
That's
an amazing stat.
Yeah, I think the guy that did it was Bobby Jones back in 1930,
yeah,
and they weren't even the same four that they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have all that weighing on him after all these years, and he's had a lot of Sunday opportunities in the past where he just wasn't able to do it. But the amount of pressure, you know, when he's going for that last putt, I said to one of the people I was there with, I said, how does he even pull that putter back? You know, just not only just knowing the pressure of all that he's gone through all these years, but then you've got this entire massive crowd that was huge yesterday there, not even to mention a worldwide audience. Right?
Yeah.
And to do that. And I saw a couple of guys during the week I think it was one guy was missing like a 1 foot putt, seriously, a 1 or 2 foot putt. And I'm like, you know what? I could miss that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's the thing about golf, because there are shots that you watch and you go, I could do that, you know? But, you know, 99 out of 100, you know, you're like, there's no way I can do what they're doing. after the drive yesterday that he hit on that last hole, I said, I could do that in 3 shots.
This is, so I heard a little bit of noise. Some people are never going to be happy. And you know, when you've got an athlete like this, he's going to have, you know, lovers and haters. And I saw some people saying that it would have been more interesting if he had some more competitive golf. Golfers chasing him down at the end. For one, like, he didn't need it. Rory was his own enemy. Rory was the most difficult golfer for him to face on that green himself. It didn't matter if the ghost of any Arnold Palmer, any Gray, Bobby Jones, any of these guys were chasing him. None of those guys could have competed with the voice in his own head. Nothing can. And anybody out there knows exactly what I'm talking about.
And you know, and to be honest, Justin Rose has been around for a long time and is a great champion as well. Scottie Scheffler, the number one in the world, he was only 3 shots back.
I was wondering about.
And Bryson DeChambeau was 4 shots back, and he led for a while.
I feel like one of the underlying thing, or one of the things that's gotten lost in all of this, is that the DeChambeau thing. Because I thought for sure we were going to a face-off with those two, and that was going to be pretty darn exciting.
Yeah, and DeChambeau's 2 behind to start the day, and after hole number 1, they're tied. Because Rory starts off with a double, and people are like, oh no, here he goes again, right? And it's kind of interesting, too, because DeChambeau went to that LIV Golf, and so there's that divide for some people that, you know, they're against it, or others are for it, so it depends where you stand on that. But the thing that I really enjoyed about DeChambeau, whether you're on the side of the LIV Golf or not, was how he plays up to the crowd, and he's kind of reinvented himself that way. So you watched him walking from green to tee box, you know, from one hole to the next, and he's constantly high-fiving guys, giving out golf balls. You know, even after the 18th hole on Saturday, stopped, got a ball, signed it, and gave it to a little kid right in the front.
Yeah.
You know, how does that not warm the cockles of your heart, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's hard not to. Yeah. I know my brother was feeling a similar thing there. And I hadn't gotten a chance to really ask him much about the LIV Golf situation. And he just looked at it as, well, it's rich golfers getting more money. I mean, you know, I think it was, at first, it certainly had its you know, feelings and stuff. But unfortunately, this is another one of those things where when people talk about the LIV Golf situation, that's fine. I wish they would talk about why they have this. This is a money laundering situation, what LIV Golf is. All it is just money laundering. I mean, this is, and look, everybody, there's few things that I know more about than the other side of the tracks. I know when something like that, I know a hustle when I see one.
And the little bit I've heard is that they're trying somehow to merge the two again and get back to having all the best golfers together all the time again instead of just for the 4 majors. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
shows.
It's one of the things that I find disappointing in sports, because I thought that sports would be one of those places, maybe even one of the last hills to stand on, because sports is not rational. We care about these things. We call them our team and things like that, when we don't own a stake right. in the franchise or any of this. We all yell at our screens when we know they can't hear us. All this stuff. It's irrational, the way we feel about this stuff. And in part because of that, I really thought that the LIV Golf thing was going to be an example to the rest of the world, as we can't be bought. We are not going to let the money completely take over our sports. We're not going to let you get away with this. We understand that what this is, all LIV Golf is, all that any of these Saudi Arabian sports are, is a way to kind of clean up the oil money. And I'm not saying anything that's an opinion. This is all that's been reported on by actual journalists many, many times over since the first inception of all this. I thought there'd be a pushback on that. I was dead wrong, because now we're seeing that some of these businesses are going to be able to put money into college universities, and we're seeing it already in the NFL and some of that. So the money laundering has already made its. It was here a long time ago. I'm not a fool. I'm just talking about in sports. We're seeing it more and more. What I have a problem with LIV is not so much with the LIV or golfers making more money. I got no problem with any of that. What I got a problem with is the actual organization and what they're actually trying to do, and what they're getting away with, and that we're letting them get away with, and nobody's really, they just kind of like, well, that's just the way it is. Like, no, they're doing some really horrible things over there, and they're trying to whitewash it now. They're trying to clean it up, and I don't see enough people standing up for that. I really thought the sports community would be the last line of defense that would do that, because we're passionate, we're crazy, and that's just who we are, and we all accept that about ourselves. It was fun when you're rewarded by that with the story that was yesterday and Rory McIlroy doing that. One other thing, I'm a little surprised that more people weren't talking about DeChambeau, and I don't want to say a collapse, but him kind of not really coming through at the end there, and just because I thought people loved to pick on that guy. But also what this means for Rory going forward. Because this was the big thing holding him, the big albatross on his shoulders. With that released, I mean, is this going to release an even better Rory? Or at least, maybe not a better Rory, but the only thing, again, that's ever gotten him in his way is him. There's been plenty of times, as you touched on, Randy, he was going into Sunday as the favorite or something like that, and he lost. And it's not like in other sports, well, somebody blocked his shot or somebody was playing good defense. No, Rory was his own defense. So if that's out of the way now, man, what could he do? What could he accomplish going forward here? I'm not saying he's going to catch up to Jack or Tiger or something, but maybe he makes it interesting. Maybe, makes it more exciting, him going forward with this off of his shoulders. I think that could be a really exciting storyline going forward for him and golf.
And I think, probably in his own mind, being, 35 years old already?
Yeah.
It's like, you get to be that old in the world of golf, you start to think too, how many more chances and opportunities am I going to have? Because I can play three super rounds, and you look at this up and down the scoreboard, and there's guys who are shooting 65, 67, 66, and one of the four rounds, they'll shoot like a 77. And that's the thing about golf. One day you can just play golf, and even for us just hackers out there, right? We can go out there and we can have a very nice round one day. We go out the very next day and you're like, what am I holding in my hands? How did I get a stick instead of a golf club? This doesn't even feel right. So you can imagine that the number of balls that they hit, and as much as they practice, there are still times, that you listen to interviews and they're just like, I just lost it. I didn't have it today. It's kind of like a pitcher, right?
Oh,
they just didn't have their stuff that day. So going forward, you don't know. I think just having that pressure off of him will let him play more freely on the one hand, but on the other hand, it is a tough game. So
there's that part of it too, that if this was a motivating factor, and without that fire under him, that motivator, maybe it goes the other route. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Either way, it'll be fun to watch, I bet.
Right.
And story of the week, that's for sure. Weekend, for sure. Well, Randy and I will be back. We're going to get in some local coverage for you when we get back here on Playmakers, proudly brought to you by Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods here at WFHR. Welcome back to Playmakers, everybody. Monday edition of the show. Randy and James hanging out with you. Thanks so much for joining us. Feel free to call up and join the conversation. 715-424-2600. Looking forward to talking with y'all. We'll get into the NBA playoff seeding in a little bit. Got some NFL and MLB news to get into as well. Maybe talk some Rafters if we have time. Speaking of local stuff, Randy's got a local update for us. What do you got, Randy?
Well, we can begin with some area baseball scores and highlights from last week. Wisconsin Rapids won 2 out of 3. On Friday, they were winners at home against Aquinas, 10-3. And then they split a doubleheader on Saturday at Toma, getting the W in the opener 5-3 before falling in the nightcap 7-6. Raiders will be at Wausau East tomorrow afternoon. Assumption picked up a pair of wins as they popped Pacelli at home 8-4. Ron Board went 6 1/3 strong innings on the hill, scattering 5 hits while striking out 9. The Royals also got a road victory over Owen Withy, 15-4, and they'll travel over to Auburndale this afternoon. Port Edwards also had a couple of games last week, losing at Tri-County 4-0. Max Michaels only allowed 5 hits and struck out 10 Penguins. The Blackhawks also lost a home contest to Roshol 10-2, and they will host Bowler tomorrow. And Nakusa fell at Pittsville 8-5 thanks to a late rally by the Panthers. Brody Withers got the W for Pittsville. Nakusa is hosting Athens as the Blue Jays flew into town earlier today. Taking a look at the girls' side of the ledger in softball action, Wisconsin Rapids, they're 5-1 on the young season as they played 4 games last week and they went 3-1. First on Tuesday, they whipped Wausau East 16-1 as Bailey Williams got the win. Next on Thursday, they fell at DC Everest 5-3 before sweeping a double dip at La Crosse Central on Saturday. Boy, this is what I read. I don't know. It sounds kind of odd, but the final said 15-0, 15-0.
Huh.
So... That's what I read.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Tomorrow, the Lady Raiders will host Marshfield. Assumption won at Amherst 2-0 on Tuesday as Macy Vollert allowed only 2 hits while striking out 13 Falcons. On Saturday at the Pacelli Triangular, the Royals were blanked by the host Cardinals 10-0 before beating Laconia 6-2. Assumption will be at Auburndale today while the Eagles return the favor by coming here tomorrow. Michael and Seth will have it for you at about 4:35 on 105.5 FM. Mm-hmm. Port Edwards came up short on the road against Pacelli, 20-0, also to Tri-County, 12-9, as well as to Roshold at home, 25-6. The Blackhawks are scheduled to host Bowler Gresham Co-op tomorrow afternoon. And on Tuesday for Nakusa, Reagan Wilhorn scattered 6 hits and had 7 Ks in a 25-6 pounding of Pittsville, while on Friday the Lady Papermakers lost at iScan 8-1, and they are scheduled to be hosting Athens right now as we speak. Next up, girls soccer, as the Lady Raiders lost 3 tight matches this week. On Tuesday at home to Onalaska, 1-0. There's that NIL thing again. Also at home on Thursday, 2-0 to Appleton West, and on the road at Bayport on Saturday, 2-1 to the Pirates. Tomorrow, Rapids heads north to face off against the Hodags. For Assumption, they went 3-1 this past week, losing at Wausau West on Monday 2-0 as 3 Dubs scored a goal in each half. Haley Hintz had 14 saves for the Royals. On Tuesday it was an 8-3 road victory over the co-op team of Melrose Mindoro and Gaelectric Trempolo. Sarah Shaw led the way for Assumption as she had 4 goals on the contest. Friday was a home victory over Mauston 9-3, while Saturday was another away win 2-0 at Northland Pines. And tomorrow the Royals are back at Washington Field as they entertain the Green Devils of Adams Friendship. And finally, at the Merriwood Conference Indoor Track Meet, which was held at UWSP this past Monday, for the girls, Stratford grabbed first place while Assumption took second. Bella Thomas had 3 firsts, one in the 60-meter dash as well as in the 200 and 400 meters, while Lucy Dolan grabbed first in both the 1600 and 3200-meter races. For the boys, Stratford again took first while Assumption finished in 8th place. Joseph Johnson captured the only first place in the 60-meter dash for the Royals. So it's just some of the area things that are taking place last week here in the Rapids area.
Great coverage, Randy. Thank you so much for that. Exciting to hear about some of these local teams and you know how they're doing in a young season already. Got my eyes all over it. We'll be covering it for you, keeping a close eye on it. And again, tomorrow we'll have some baseball on the radio, softball on the radio for you tomorrow. WIRI will have it. They'll be hosting this for you at 105.5 at 4:35. Softball, Auburndale versus Assumption. Mike and Seth going to have that one for you. Be sure to check it out, everybody. We'll be talking more about it tomorrow. I want to get into NBA playoffs with you a little bit, Randy. The seedings have been announced. The play-in games will be tomorrow, and the rest of the playoffs will begin on Saturday. Bunch of great teams and a lot of exciting things going on there. Teams that didn't make it are, you know, they didn't make it because they're firing their head coaches right now. Not that that is exactly a... So here's the thing. If they fired their coach a week ago, they might have a shot in the playoffs. It's a playoff team. If they fired him today, their season's over.
Right.
I don't know what's going on in the NBA anymore, but this is the world in the NBA for apparently that's the way it's going. The Bucks are the number 5 seed, taking on Indianapolis again, I believe, the second year in a row.
And I think they were 3-2 against them this year.
Yeah. I certainly like the odds of that one. They win, they would go on to face the probably Cleveland, because Cleveland will be facing whoever wins in the play-in game between Chicago and Miami. I feel like Chicago's going to win that one, but I wouldn't be surprised if Miami won it. They're in the play-in game. I mean, they're, you know, there's a neither team is exactly you know, lighting it up or anything right now. Like most playoffs in any sport, there's only a handful of teams that I think can win this. So I really love the early rounds in playoffs, especially in basketball.
It's kind of like the NCAA tournament, right?
Yes, yes. I think it's a lot like that. It's a great comp, I think, for Randy. Going back to seeing the Nuggets getting upset, or seeing Dallas get upset the year Dirk won an MVP and everything. I find that that's really where you get a lot of the more exciting basketball. And after that, it becomes a lot more chalk and a lot more what you expect. As far as the whole series goes, certainly locally, we're locked in on Milwaukee-Indianapolis. But outside of that, the number 3-seeded Lakers taking on the number 6-seed Minnesota Timberwolves. I find that one really exciting. I would not be surprised to see either team in the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it so interesting to me. If you tell me that the Minnesota gets back there, you know, they were there last year, you know, and Anthony Edwards is only ascending. I think that they've got some nice pieces over there. And obviously, the Lakers are the Lakers with LeBron and Luka and you know, some of the pieces they have over there.
You know, the other one is two things. First of all, if I would tell you that the Phoenix Suns with Kevin Durant and the guard
were Devin Booker or Bradley Beal
were not going to make the playoffs, I mean, not even the play-in games, you would have said, go check again, right?
Yes, yeah.
Come on.
That's crazy. And they had a championship-winning coach who they just fired.
And if you would say Golden State... You got Steph Curry. I don't care what else you got. You got Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a chance, right?
Right.
Anybody's got Steph Curry.
Yes.
A chance,
yes.
Right? So, you know, the West is always interesting, right? They got a lot of good teams over there. Out of the East, are you a believer in Cleveland? I just haven't seen them enough that, you know, they're just shocking that they're there, right? But I don't know. They're the number one seed. Boston's number two. I guess realistically, it's probably those two teams.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
I will say I'm with you on the Cleveland thing. And I felt the same way about Boston. And honestly, it took me a week until after they won the championship to really look at Boston as a champion. that team doesn't
Larry
normally...
Bird there.
Yeah, I mean, that team just doesn't normally... That type of team, not the Boston franchise, but that type of team, when I was a kid, would never win a championship. The way that the game is being played now and stuff. So I was still surprised by that even a week later. So I wonder if Cleveland's just got to do it, you know, and I don't mean win the whole thing, but even getting making a run in getting to the conference finals for sure, but making that a challenge. I'm with you on the East almost in general. Like, you could almost said any team in the East and I would have followed you on it. I wonder if this playoffs is going to be a playoffs of believers. Making believers out of people. And I wonder if this is going to be a playoffs of the new guard.
Okay.
Because with OKC, this is the third year now we're talking about OKC and,
right.
Oh, what can they do? Where are they going to go? And all this. And, you know, at a certain point, it's like, okay, well, you know, clock's ticking here. When are you going to do something? And so this is I think a make it or break it year for Oklahoma City. Now, they're going to be around for years. They're not going anywhere. They could easily win a championship 3 seasons from now with that core that they have. But I think as far as, you know, people paying attention and being a storyline in the NBA, you got to make a run here. If not, get to the finals with that OKC team. They've been a darling all season long going into the season. I think the same thing about Cleveland. And in the oddest, weirdest way, Boston that still has something to prove. Now, I don't know that I don't think that franchise thinks that and the players think that, but almost everybody outside of Massachusetts thinks that. So there are some interesting storylines, I think, with some of the top or one, you know, chalk teams.
So if you're going to talk, you know, teams that are the top, and if they make the NBA championship, do you think it would be a television network NBA nightmare if it was Cleveland against OKC?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, can you imagine?
Yeah,
two Midwestern.
I love it.
Oh, no West Coast.
Oh, my God. It's almost,
we got to do something to get the Lakers. What is it going to be? Yes. We got to do something. What can we? So they're sitting around in conference rooms right now. They come up.
Adam Silver invents the trades in playoffs. We're going to trade LeBron and Luka to OKC. I love that. I would love that kind of any mashup of that, but especially that particular matchup would be fantastic.
It'd be like the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers, right?
Yes. I like that. Wanted to talk a little NFL. Don't have a whole lot here, but I am getting very, very, very excited about the NFL draft. We're so close to it.
Next Thursday in Green Bay.
Whew. I'm going to keep putting this into the ether, keep putting this out there just in hopes that it'll happen. Not that I actually think it will, but I really hope the Packers make a move during the draft. Mm. Whatever that is, I just hope it's exciting, and I'd love to see a home team, a hosting city do something like that. And I think it'd be fun and good for football, let alone for the Packer fans, of course, and everything. Let me get to a couple of other notes real quick first. Patrick Peterson retired today, mm-hmm. 8-time Pro Bowler, retired with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Thought that was cool.
Yep.
We don't get to single these guys out very often when they retire. A shout out to him. It was a lot of fun watching him play. I know it was usually for a team that I was not rooting for, but I liked him in college, liked him in the pros. One of the few, I don't know how much we're going to see the corner returner anymore, but a guy who would make a play on defense and stay on the field to return the ball. You know, that kind of athlete. I love watching those guys play, and he was a lot of fun. A big tip of the hat to him. Enjoy retirement. For those that did not see this, football did something that was very similar to baseball a couple of years ago when baseball included the Negro League stats.
Okay.
And everything changed, where we're seeing guys that we always put at the number one spot, now they're tied with somebody else and that kind of thing. So for those that did not see, I got my stat of the show here, and that is 7. And we all know that Tom Brady won 7 Super Bowls, and he is the all-time winningest Super Bowl, you know, player and all that. Well, the NFL recently began including 1940s stats, which really means the All-American Football Conference.
Okay.
And including those stats now. So, with that being said, Tom Brady now has a partner with him at the number 7 spot, Otto Graham.
Oh, sure.
Who also has 7 championship titles under his belt. So, it's not just Brady anymore, but Brady and Otto share this, almost unimaginable feat that to think of any player actually getting 7 Super Bowls, let alone a quarterback getting 7 Super Bowl wins. Now Brady shares that championship, holds that with Otto Graham.
Interesting, you know, and I'm without taking the risk of sounding foolish. Did he play for Cleveland Browns also in his pro career? I'm trying to recall.
Otto Graham, that's a good question. I'll have to double check that, but yeah, it does look like he did. Yeah, it does look like he did.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and, well, Bart Starr, I think he won 5, you know, if you count just NFL championships and the 2 Super Bowls that they picked up, because I think, Lombardi had 5 championships in 9 years or something, and Bart was the quarterback for all of those, so he's got to be not too far behind.
Otto Graham did play his entire career for the So Cleveland, his 2 teams, Northwestern Wildcats, because he is a Waukegan boy. Okay. They put that out there. I don't get to say that very often.
No.
But he's also, he played for Northwestern and Cleveland, and those are his 2 teams. He did coach for the Washington Commanders. He did coach over there for a little bit, so that was what threw me. I knew they were somewhere else. By the way, they have Otto Graham listed as a quarterback halfback.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's fantastic.
Those old guys. Fun just to watch some of those old NFL films, the little bit they have on them. It's just great to see the way that they played in the mud and the benches. And I know I saw some old films on Packer games. No kidding. They play like the Bears with that great rivalry. They would be 15 yards out of bounds where the benches were, and they'd be tackling them yet.
Yeah,
and that's not it wasn't even a penalty.
It's crazy.
The refs would just run over there, kind of separate them, and they go back out in the field.
That's when football was football.
John Fonseca.
These guys with their helmets. And we'll take a time out. We'll come back with more Playmakers.
You know, we couldn't stop talking hockey, could we?
Yeah, could not stop. Could not stop. Still talking about the Lady Badgers winning. And a shout-out to Western Michigan.
Yeah.
Winning the men's
four.
Yeah. But we shift gears and change shifts to get to baseball a little bit here.
Good segue.
And I wanted to go ahead and get into this because I thought this was an interesting thing. And honestly, I didn't have a lot of baseball talk to do today. But I did see this article from Major League Baseball, from ESPN, I should say. And David Schoenfield with the interesting idea and an interesting take on baseball. And they've got the 2025 Watchability Index, ranking the most fun teams to watch. Mm. So to give you a barometer on this one, for example, like he has at number 30, everybody say it with me, the Chicago White Sox. Everybody saw that one coming.
Right.
They are the least exciting team to watch. No star power, not a lot of organization, a very, very young team and inexperienced team.
Even the players go in the locker room while they're hitting, yeah.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
What do you mean I'm up next?
But on the other side of this, you know, where, of course, are the Brewers? Where do the Brewers rank in this list? Well, at number nine. In the top 10, and not surprising, I think, to most people, if you think about it for a second, you might, you know, be surprised at first, but when you think about it a little bit, you might even think they should be higher.
They're young, they're exciting, their speed is fun to watch, they beat out ground balls that look routine, they seldom hit into double plays because of that speed, and with the young Churio, you know, being 21 years old, how fun is that, right?
Yes, yeah, well, and speaking of Churio, is in... We're seeing this from him, and he's still learning.
Yeah.
He's not even close to his prime. Oh. He's still learning discipline in the plate. You know, I mean, as soon as he learns that, takes a couple walks and everything. Oh, man.
And I think the thing that a lot of people forget is how banged up their pitching staff is.
Yeah.
I looked a week or two ago. They had like 6-7 guys, and since then, I think other people have gone on to the DL for a while or the injured list for a while now. And if they ever get healthy and get a starting rotation, because right now, you know, to be where they are, what are they, 500 right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing it with mirrors, really.
Yeah. Well, and there's a model that that you're seeing in like the Yankees and the Brewers and some teams like this of, if I can't get starting pitching, I'm just going to try to beat you. I'm just going to try to beat you old-fashioned, score more runs than you do.
And they've been doing pretty well.
Yeah. It's not so bad. Christian Yelich, you speak of health. None of us can guarantee we get 100 games from this guy and everything, so I take every game I enjoy, and especially seeing the hot start from him and the way he's been playing. Bryce Turang is one of the most underrated players in baseball. This is part of the reason why I wasn't worried about Willy Adames leaving. Not only him, but the Ortiz kid. You got a great infield in Milwaukee. That's a nice infield. We all know that once the trade deadline gets closer and everything, and Milwaukee's in the running, that they could make a move there for starting pitching, so we'll see. But one name I want to shout out, and I don't think that in the state of Wisconsin, I don't think he's underrated, but I do think Major League Baseball is not paying enough attention to Contreras.
Oh.
He's absolutely the most underrated catcher in baseball.
He started off a little slower this year, but he's starting to come around.
He's such a fun catcher to watch. I love the angle in baseball that has been around forever, behind the pitcher, the starting pitcher, or the pitcher in general, and getting to see the catcher's hand and the signals that he makes, the movement he does. Contreras is old school. It reminds me of the Santiago's and the Olimars and some of those catchers' types, which not surprisingly comes from a catcher family, too. I didn't mean to do that, but... The Contreras family, of course. He's a fun catcher to watch. Watch his game, not just at the bat, but his defense.
The other night, we're watching the Brewers. They were taking on the Diamondbacks, and the catcher for the Diamondbacks, you know, if he's trying to frame a pitch, he'd pull it if it was outside. He'd really jerk his glove in. And then we said, now watch the difference with Contreras. And he just very smoothly moves it
yes.
in. And I said, you know, the umpire's not going to be fooled by that quick jerk, but boy, you just that little swift, little smooth move makes a huge difference.
He's a guy, what I was saying about Jackson Churio, I thought that Contreras was really quick to learn behind the plate, really learned Major League Baseball defense, really ahead of his time.
When I watched him at the beginning of the year last year when they got him, I just looked at somebody and said, how did we get this guy?
Yeah, most underrated trade, most undercovered and underrated trade in all of sports maybe last season.
That was crazy.
A nice move. And part of why they're an exciting team to mm-hmm. watch yep. and should be for, all summer long.
Yeah. My favorite is when he does an interview with Sophie and she has to speak Spanish to him and then he goes out to the mound and talks.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, he's just messing with us.
That's something that I was talking about last week about Ellie De La Cruz, one of the more exciting players to watch and everything. everything. He's gone out of his way to really learn English, and he has a teacher with him and everything.
I've heard this, yes.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't expect a player to do that, but if I'm him, if I'm looking to not only embrace myself with the Major League Baseball fans, but heck, look at this as a business thing too, and marketing wise, and you're that much more sellable. And you know, to the sport and to fans, when you can do that, when you can speak their language, it's no different than a player going overseas and learning their language.
Yeah. Isn't he fun, though, to watch?
He's so much fun.
Was it last year you told second, third, and home on like three straight pitches? It was crazy.
I feel like he gets the game, too. You know, he gets the history of the game while also being one of these younger players that are exciting and have some fun out there.
And he just looks so smooth at everything he does, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
He's
got it.
He's another one where we haven't even seen him in his prime
yet.
And it's kind of fun to watch. And speaking of, like, Christian Yelich, I wanted to make sure to bring this up, too, because he's another one that we got to appreciate while we got him. Mike Trout's been playing some great baseball. Like, he's 27. Like, he's been out there just playing great. You know, injury-wise, who knows how long he'll have or anything like that. So instead of getting caught up in how long we're going to have or, you know, if these guys are going to be around, I say just enjoy them while we got them. And let's just have some fun while the season's young.
Well, speaking of enjoying, yesterday the Cubs took 2 out of 3 from Los Angeles, and I'm like, yeah, wait.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Raptors baseball got a great tax day promotion for you, everybody. Get on over there and get a deal on tickets. Uncle Sam took 50%, so the Raptors are giving it back. Score 50% off weekday grandstand tickets right now. Get to northwoodsleague.com and get those tickets. We'll meet you at the ballpark. Randy, great show today.
Fun time.
Have a great night, everybody. We'll be back on Wednesday.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.